Hello and welcome to the Wednesday, September 12th, 2012 edition of the Sands and its Storm Centers Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm today recording from Baltimore, Maryland. As you can hear, I am in Baltimore. We have a little conflict tomorrow with the monthly thread update. I tried to pre-record it earlier, but it didn't really work that well. So we will have to re-record it tomorrow evening. So we will delay the thread update from 1 p.m. Easter to likely 7 p.m. Easter. If you are interested, just keep watching the webcast site for announcements. An archive should be available on Thursday, no matter when we will record it. But let's go on with our normal scheduled program. And top of the news today, Microsoft's September patches. Well, as announced last week, we only got two bulletins and actually only two vulnerabilities. First one in Visual Studio Team Foundation Server. This is a piece of software that you may deploy if you have a development team and you would like to manage a development team, give them some place to check in source code, and also allow them to interact with customers. Pretty nice software. Well, the vulnerability we have here is a cross-site scripting vulnerability that could be used to attack this Studio Team Foundation server. In order to exploit this, a developer would have to be exposed to a URL, click on it, and then be directed to this server. And then, of course, it's up to the attacker what to make that developer's browser do. Don't underestimate cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. There is quite a bit of evilness that can happen, so do patch this. Luckily, not too many people do have this deployed. It is popular software, but really typically only deployed if you do have a development team that uses Microsoft's development products. The second one is very similar. It's actually another cross-site scripting vulnerability, and that's MS-12062, also rated as important by Microsoft, and it affects System Center Configuration Manager. This one is a software that's being deployed to manage configurations across large networks. Again, it is popular software, but nothing that you find in a household. So if you run it, patch it, get it over with, probably not going to be too disruptive. Of course, the risk here is that an attacker would use that cross-site scripting vulnerability to make the users or the administrator's browser change configurations on the network. That's probably what I can think of being the most tricky exploit. Now, for neither one of these two vulnerabilities is there an exploit out right now. However, cross-site scripting exploits are pretty easy to create once there's sufficient detail available about the nature of the flaw. I don't think it will take too long to actually build an exploit around it. And then we got an update from GoDaddy. Against everybody's speculation, including ours, GoDaddy was not the subject of a denial of service attack. Instead, it was just a configuration issue, which kind of brings home the old message that most system downtime is caused by human sources and in particular configuration mistakes. We always spend a lot of time in extra power supplies and backup generators and redundant systems, but when it comes down to probably the number one reason for downtime is people not testing things correctly, pressing the wrong button at the wrong time. And then we got a little bit more details about the SSL issue that's going to be announced shortly. As you probably remember, the name of the tool is Scryme. It's going to be announced at the EcoParty conference in Buenos Aires, and it's going to be announced by the same group that brought us Beast. Now, the pre-announcement noted that this particular attack uses a feature, and that feature is present in newer versions of TLS, so it's not just TLS 1.0 that's the issue here, but TLS 1.1 and 1.2. Well, there was an interesting posting to a discussion group that pointed out that this is very likely compression. With compression in TLS, you're able to compress the entire data stream. So let's say you're running HTTPS, so HTTP over SSL. What can now happen is that your headers are being compressed. With HTTP's native compression, you can only compress the body. That's very interesting, for example, for AJAX websites. AJAX websites always have the problem that there's a lot of little data snippets going forth and back, so the headers take up a big chunk of space, which is kind of the motivation behind protocols like Speedy. Now, what happens here is if the attacker now injects a piece of text that's a copy of a text in the header, then this is going to be compressed away and the data stream will be shorter compared to injecting the same amount of text that's not present in the header. So an attacker now could essentially guess a cookie value one letter at a time by just injecting cookie colon and then, well, the cookie name equals and then one letter. Once he found out that this one letter matches the next letter. So essentially we are back to a linear problem and a reasonably quick kind of algorithm to decode or decrypt passwords. Very similar to some other attacks against HTTPS, for example, against search engines that support HTTPS and use AJAX to pre-fill search results. In this case, the size of the search result being returned by the server depends on what the user typed and can be used to deduce what the user actually searched for. Anyway, we'll see what they will actually come out with, but compression is probably one of the areas to look at. And this is it for today. Sorry for running over a little bit, but thanks again for listening and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.